Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:47 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is March 7th, and it was a pretty schizophrenic day on Wall Street in particular, because the market started out down on the day, then it rallied up into positive territory and finished out the day pretty much unchanged. So for example, when we look at the S&P 500, you can see clearly that it was down earlier, but then closed above its open but below yesterday's close. So it looks better than the kind of trading that we saw throughout the day. Well, one of the things that has certainly been quite obvious from the best performers that we've seen in the index has been the continued relative strength that we've seen from subscription-oriented businesses. And one of the reasons for that is because a lot of the companies that have adopted a subscription model have been in the technology sector, and they are benefiting from having transitioned from being a highly cyclical sector to being much more have much more in common with consumer discretionary consumer staples. Amazon's a perfect example of that. It sits very squarely in the consumer discretionary sector, but it's a technology company. And with Prime, it has evolved into a subscription-oriented business, and it continues to accelerate higher. So that is representing a tailwind for the wider market. When we look at, for example, Microsoft, they're making it progressively more difficult to avoid taking out Office 365 rather than buying the piece of software. So therefore, that has also contributed to the streamlining of their earnings. And it's the same thing with Autodesk, which surged higher in here today. And that was despite the fact that its earnings were below what was expected, but investors rewarded it because of the consistency of those earnings, because of the subscription model that it has adopted. And Adobe Systems was the first one of those companies to adopt the subscription model, and that was back in 2013 when it completed its base formation, and it also continues to surge higher here. That's where the commonality is within this small group of companies that have shaken off the worst effects of the pullback that we saw in February. But when we look at the wider market, then we can look at this and say that this reaction has been reasonably similar size to the one that we saw in 2015. But the one that we saw in 2015 held up the market for the better part of a year. And that's why I continue to think that the most likely scenario is that we are going to have some additional ranging. And when we look at the consumer staples sector, then we can see why. This is a sector that is comprised of large companies with deep global franchises that are benefiting from the rise of the global consumer. But considering the fact that we have the very real possibility that we are heading in towards a less benign environment for globally oriented companies with the rise of trade wars, then this index has not bounced in the same way that those subscription models have bounced. That's despite the fact that the cash flows that these types of companies have have the same kind of consistency as those subscription oriented businesses. The difference, however, is that point is largely recognized for the consumer staples sector, and those bond-like characteristics are what is holding back the index now. Because of the consistency of their dividends, they've been bond proxies. And we are at an interesting point for these bond yields, because there is such high commonality in the bond markets between all of the kinds of instruments that tend to rise in an inflationary environment, where we have this clear base formation in terms of 10-year treasury yields. And this has been a very modest pullback from the region of the 3% level over the course of the last 4 weeks. And certainly nothing like the kind of volatility that we had at these levels back in 2013. Well, we know that there's a great deal of additional supply in the pipeline, and we know that the Federal Reserve is going to be buying less. But that does not explain the commonality that we get not only in the TIPS market, but then when we look at, for example, the UK yield, then we can see a similar pattern. If we look at the German yield, we get a similar pattern there, but not the same length of basing. So, for example, the gilt yield was went sideways for about a year and then it broke out. If we look at the 10-year in Australia, then we get a similar condition as well, where the yield has been ranging below 3% since 2015. Well, I'm looking forward to the chart seminar in Melbourne next month, and I suspect that this is going to be a big topic of conversation, considering that interest rates in Australia have been at rock bottom levels, and yet for that is only on a domestic consideration because they're still reasonably high compared to just about everywhere else, but that the bond yield has compressed to levels that are comparable to everywhere else, and that holds out the possibility that when yields rise elsewhere, they'll also rise in Australia. And of course, that is why we have such high commonality in government bonds, because capital is both mobile and global. And that is clearly the case in terms of this move that we're getting in the government bond markets, which are multiples the size of the global equity markets. But then, of course, we should also look at the commodity sector. Gold was in negative territory in here today. It continues to range above the $1,300 area. But the broader picture is that it has been ranging for 5 years below $1,400. There is a clear rounding characteristic to this base formation. The most important thing that's happened is that big move that we saw in 2016 that broke the medium-term downtrend. We're now in a period of right-hand extension following that type 2 bottoming characteristic. So that's not at all unusual. As long as the index is, excuse me, the price is holding the $1,300 area, then this can still be considered a reasonably consistent range. Gold has always been best bought following reactions. Because it is volatile and because so often we get failed upside breaks, then paying up for gold or commodities is very rarely advisable. So if it does come back towards $1,300, then we'll probably see if we're still, if we are indeed still in a demand-dominated environment, it should bounce in much the same way it did last week. Well, the other thing that I think people will be looking at is ETF holdings of gold. And what is particularly interesting is that they are at new highs. And they held that upward bias from the beginning of 2017. It was a lengthy consolidation, but what it also helped to ram home was the point that the people who were buying gold and investing in ETFs were doing so in a manner that was completely ambiguous to the price, or agnostic to the price, I should say. So that would suggest that people are looking for some form of hedge against inflation. Now, there is an additional point that is worthy of consideration here, and it is Bitcoin, because that was down $800 in here today. And an $800 move in a $10,000 instrument is still a significant decline. What is also worth considering is that since the price in January was 15,000, it is down about a third since the beginning of the year. This was, in no uncertain terms, a crash. There is no doubt that Bitcoin was stealing gold's thunder throughout all of 2017. That's no longer the case, and we have there's certainly the liquidation of some of the positions in Japan following the bankruptcy of the Mt. Gox exchange that is contributing to additional supply coming through into this market. They've sold about 400 billion, excuse me, $400 million worth of Bitcoin, and they've got over $1 billion left to sell. And that is a source of supply that is agnostic to price that is coming back into this market. And it is obvious that they are looking at moves above 10,000 as ways of liquidating that position. And what that is likely to contribute to is significant ranging. When you get a crash, then the epicenter of risk is the instrument that is least likely to regain its peak early. Well, Bitcoin was the epicenter of risk. And it is the oldest of the cryptocurrencies and the least well equipped to deal with the technological innovations that are coming through fast and quick in this sector. And therefore, it is, I think the closest of all of the possible ways that we can compare it is that Bitcoin is closer to Netscape, and Ethereum is more like Amazon, and IOTA is probably more like Facebook. So if that is indeed the case, it has plenty of competition. And considering the speed with which innovation is occurring in this sector, because it is entirely software-based, there isn't really much need for hardware development, then there is a real possibility that Bitcoin could cease to exist within the next 5 years, or that it will become a very niche market as the cryptocurrency revolution or evolution continues and persists and moves on to fresh pastures. But that could be potentially positive for gold, as the kinds of people that were buying Bitcoin for its safe haven characteristics and its lack of additional supply will be attracted similarly to the gold market. Well, when we look at what is going on in terms of the very short term, Gary Cohen's resignation from the Trump administration isn't particularly great news. And what it does suggest is that we do have the specter of trade wars. That's not great news for a country like India. And then the Nifty has broken down out of the short-term range and now is right in the region of the trend mean. So this is a key area where it should begin to find support if this medium-term advance is still consistent. The bank index, the Bombay Banks Index, is now below the trend mean and it has led throughout. So that's not particularly benign in terms of the trend consistency, and it will have to rally in a rather dynamic fashion if it is going to persist in this overall advance. The rupee has weakened, but not in a dynamic fashion, and it is certainly not breaking down relative to the US dollar in here. But one of the primary constituents of the index is Tata Consultancy. It is a clear company that benefits from outsourcing, and of course, outsourcing and more jobs in India means less jobs somewhere else. And in the condition that we have a potential for trade wars, then it is these types of outsourcing companies that could come perhaps under some scrutiny or under more risk. So quite whether this breakout will be sustained is likely to be a barometer for how extensive this the risk of trade wars is likely to be considered. Well, then when we look at the European markets, they were in positive territory in here today, and they have bounced from the lower side of the range, but they do need to push back above the trend mean to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The FTSE 100 has bounced from above that 7,000 area again, but so far it hasn't really pushed through on the upside, and it really does need to do better in order to, I think, to galvanize support and to really suggest that the bulls are back in the driver's seat. Now, Brent crude was down by $1.25 in here today. This has been a more volatile environment since we had that big pullback at the beginning of February, and that was a trend in consistency following what had been a particularly consistent advance from June through to the end of January. So what that confirms is that there is a great deal of additional supply comes in around $70, and that that supply tends to come out of the market as prices come back towards $40. And there are a lot of moving parts in the energy sector, but we know that consumers are voting for more electric cars or hybrid electric cars, to be, I think, perhaps more accurate. But that does not represent a growth trajectory for consumption of gasoline. So when we think about it in those terms, it is probably going to be rather difficult for prices to sustain a move above $70. And even in that eventuality, it would probably have to be accompanied by a geopolitical event, which would then also have, I think, probably wider consequences, because it would represent an acceleration in oil's advance, which is very seldom a welcome development. But also, considering that that's a big ask, well, there is the possibility that prices just start to come back down again. And then what that would do is perhaps temper some of the inflationary pressures that we have. As long as oil prices are simply going sideways, then I think people will start to look at other sectors. Well, one of the other sectors that will perhaps be the focus of a trade war is lumber. And it is interesting that over the course of the last six sessions, lumber prices have pulled back in a dynamic manner, and they were down the limit again in here today. Well, they are somewhat overbought relative to the trend mean, and there is certainly the possibility that it is that overextension is going to be unwound. The trend mean currently coincides with about that $450 area, and that represents the upper side of what has been a generational long process of ranging in a volatile manner. Well, if lumber prices find support around the $450 area and continue to hold above that, then we can conclude that this is a wholly new environment for lumber prices. That's something we have not seen previously. And again, that would feed through into inflationary pressures because of the role that lumber has in home building in North America. I think there is the realistic possibility that we are going to look at additional inflationary pressures. That is, when you start to take a step back and look at all of the various trends that are evolving on the social and political front, whether it is the rise of populism, the return of fiscal stimulus, the kind of revolt we're getting against the status quo and trade wars, all of those things are inherently inflationary. And I think that when we see all the base formations that we have in the bond markets and the commodity markets, then there is a realistic possibility that people are now positioning themselves for a return to inflationary pressures. So I think that is perhaps the thing that people are going to be most concerned with over the course of the next few months, and not least because the most likely scenario for the wider market is for ranging, with the exception of those subscription-oriented businesses. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.